This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Madison to his left, and Madison now on a run. Solly trying to get back there. Bauer's gone across, ball into the box, looking for Tony. He's going to find him. No, great defending by Payne. Oh, he's given a penalty. I don't believe it. He's given a penalty against Page on Tony. It's an utter disgrace.
That is a huge,
utter huge disgrace.
Call. I am not convinced whatsoever.
Oh, and he.
Oh. You knew well, that. You knew
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
decision.
Yes, I know.
It's a great ball in from Madison, invited the header from Tony. It just looked like Tony died for it, and Page is right next to him. I'm not convinced there was a push whatsoever.
Side by side, side by side. I'd have to see that again, but I don't think that's even close.
It's so cruel on Charlton, so cruel. Peterborough have defended for their lives. There's another block before that from Aribo. And now Peterborough with the penalty. It's a huge call from referee. He's got to be certain, and I'm not sure.
No way. He's just got to be. He's just doing it for effect. That's all he's doing. That's all he's got in his locker. He's got no refereeing now whatsoever. And it's going to be Cummins who'll take this penalty on 88 minutes and scores. An utter, utter disgrace.
Good evening and welcome to Charlton Live. Fair to say Terry didn't take that well, that last minute penalty. Right, my name is Louis Mendes. Thank you for joining us here live on Maritime Radio for the big match preview. Joining me here in the studio is...
Just one of them.
Sorry, just finishing my crisps.
Delicious, those.
Yeah, salt and vinegar. Joining us here in the studio is Mr. Tom Willing. How are you doing, Tom?
All right.
Yeah, you
just about calmed down.
Yeah, from
it took a while.
Yeah, from the game or the bonus scandal.
A bit of both. Although the bonus doesn't affect me directly, so
we say directly, indirectly.
It's like I know brown paper bag.
No, people work at the club and that. But, more the game.
Yeah, joining the pair of us, of course, is Nathan Munn. How you doing, Nathan?
Living the dream, mate.
Living the dream. It's going to cost you.
What?
Don't worry. Right, on tonight's show, we will discuss the latest scandal to come out of SU7. There's a new one every week, which is why we have to come on twice a week just to discuss them. The bonus scandal, the club staff have not been paid bonuses that they say they've been promised. They have now written an open letter to Roland du Châtelet. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about Tuesday's game with the Posh, which we lost. Oh, excuse me. And then we'll talk about plenty of other stuff. We'll look ahead to Saturday's game with Fleetwood. We're going to hear from members of the women's team as well. But first of all, let's go straight on to the bonuses. Tom, you take over from here because I can't talk.
Yeah, you just sort yourself out. Oh, we there. What do you want to know?
Yeah. Right, so obviously it's been... Charlton have hit the headlines again this week for all the wrong reasons, as they pretty much do every week, it seems. And this week, the bonuses that the staff claim they've been promised, and you know, there's no reason not to believe them, it's come to light that they haven't been paid by Roland du Châtelet. I mean, first things first. I mean, this doesn't seem like a fair way to treat your loyal staff.
No, and it's another thing in a very long line of issues that have gone on, but this one seems to have hit home with people a lot more than some of them, because, as you say, it's affecting hard-working individuals who, you know, aren't on hundreds of thousands of pounds. They're people who earn your average wage, some possibly less than that. and they've worked very hard to meet targets that they were told would result in bonuses, as I understand it. They've hit those targets, again, as I understand it, and not been paid those bonuses. So I don't know from a legal standpoint where anybody sits in all this, but it seems very murky to me that those people who have been promised those bonuses are now not getting them. Again, we'll go into the letters, and apparently everything that Roland is doing is contractually accurate. But yeah, it seems to me a very difficult situation, and a lot of people, understandably, have taken the side of the employees.
Yeah, well, like, the only thing I will say, I can't imagine that this would have gone public unless the, you know, and having taken legal advice, unless the staff feel that they are entitled legally to what's happened. Now, you know, to give it some sort of timeline, so we saw on, I think it was Monday evening, it started coming out in the Daily Mail, the story about the lack of bonuses. To which, you know, it was on Tuesday, and we all asked for, you know, comments from the club, and we were told that the club would be speaking to the staff or before any comment was made. So then we saw on the Wednesday morning, the night after the Peterborough game, an email came round from Roland du Châtelet. Had plenty of stuff in there, including a brief takeover update, but the main headline from this particular story is the fact that he's decided that these bonuses will not be paid. And he says, due to the poor financial health, for example, of the club. Now, you know, I think they say that in the region of £10 million was lost in the club last season. Now, we already knew that was going to happen. Hmm. Charlton do not make a profit, and they never have, and they never will. So surely any insensitized bonus would not have been based on Charlton somehow turning in a profit. The only way we could have turned in a profit is if we sold every single player that we owned.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's quite clear to everyone why we had a bad season on the pitch and bad season financially last year, because of a certain someone being at the helm. And obviously, I mean, in terms of, yeah, if we were going to make, it was a bad season financially, yes, but these ain't profit-based targets. These are like incentivized targets and obviously team KPIs, so to speak. So, and like Tom said, if they've done that, so these workers have worked their bums off, you know, all year, which I think a lot of people might not even understand how much work goes into the behind the scenes for everyone to enjoy this football club. And then all of a sudden, as they work hard, hit their targets, which, you know, they've more than totally earned, and then all of a sudden he says, oh, no, you're not getting it. To me, you can say, like, oh, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to reduce, you know, allegedly on the electricity or whatever, and cleaning or whatever. But these people are the core of, if you want to call it a business, but it's a football club, these are the core people that make it run day to day. And if he's trying to, I was going to use another word, but I won't, but to dissatisfy them, maybe that's the wrong word, but yeah, it's just bang out of order for me, and it's no surprise now that it, like you say, it has gone public.
Yeah, I mean, Roland made it clear in his email that he believes that he is fulfilling contractual obligations, but like I say, I can't imagine, you know, if you've been set a KPI and told you'll get a bonus, I mean, if it's in writing, for example, you should be being paid it shortly. And like I say, I understand that they've taken on legal advice, and they wouldn't have done this without taking on legal advice as well. I mean, because it's a drop in the ocean compared to if I think Rick Everett says he'd probably be in the region of about, you know, all totaled up about £50,000. So obviously that's not all for one person. That's going to be split across however many people, 20 or so people. That is nothing in the world of football. That is nothing in the amount of money really that Roland's going to have to spend every month that he still owns his club. It comes across as very stingy.
Yeah, that's every single cost cutting measure he's put in place seems to be that. And he comes across and says we're trying to drive down the extortionate running costs of the business. Well, they're running costs that he implemented. Those running costs are his fault as well, because he's owned the club for long enough now. He's had time to bring those down if he needed to. It's not like we've suddenly started making this operating loss. And the reason that we're losing so much compared to our income in revenue is again down to him, because he's driven fans away, which, okay, supposedly only counts for a small portion of the money that they bring in. We've got relegated, so we're a league lower. Again, that's down to him because of the players we've brought in and the way that the managers have been handled and everything else. So everything ends at his door. And when you're, you know, if players were on bonuses for certain targets and they met them and didn't get paid, they'd be annoyed. And they're players, even at our level, that get paid far more than the average worker. So then when you're looking at people like cleaning staff, like office staff, who are not on huge wages, that bonus might only be 50 grand spread across those payments to him, but the couple of grand or whatever that certain people are going to get might make a huge difference to those people. And to just backtrack from whatever was promised or whatever was written into contracts or whatever they are all claiming, it is hugely unfair on them.
So the staff sort of got together after that email was sent by Roland du Châtelet. It was leaked to the Coalition Against Roland du Châtelet card within 20 minutes, it would seem. It was very quickly out there and on the card system. I mean, it's quite clearly disgruntled members of staff, and they came together to write an open letter to Roland. It says, "Dear Mr. du Châtelet, we wish to express our extreme disappointment at your decision not to pay hard-working staff the money they'd previously been promised based on our performances this year. The work produced by staff who dedicate their lives and go above and beyond to do their best for Charlton Athletic Football Club is dependent on a large amount of goodwill." And obviously, naming no names, but I know, you know, that there's plenty of staff at the Valley that I interact with or get to interact with. And you know that they work longer hours than what they ought to. You know they work incredibly late hours, you know, to get work done for the club. And it is part of the club, that this is a service to fans. If they didn't do that, then stuff wouldn't happen at the club, which would mean even more fans would decide not to come because it would look like a bit of a circus, even though, I mean, many people would say it already is. If these people didn't go above and beyond, then Roland du Châtelet would be losing even more money.
Oh, exactly. And then now he's done that, I mean, what are the staff going to do now going forward? Are they going to bend over backwards for him? Of course they ain't. Do you know what I mean? And like you say, there's certain elements, not even, you know, match day obviously sticks out a lot to everyone because that's when, we, you know, most of us are here. But obviously, the club doesn't shut down Monday to Friday. Loads of stuff happens during the week. And people obviously, like you say, going above and beyond and working the extra hours. And for me, I just don't know how you're going to repair that relationship now, because there's that trust element, like, for me, is fully gone. So obviously, I don't obviously work at the club, but just on the outside, it just seems so, I don't know, it's just infuriating, and I'm not, like Tom said, not directly involved, and I just feel sorry for him.
The staff ended their letter saying, you know, unanimously that the feeling amongst staff was that they were angry and upset due to the decision and the lack of previous communication surrounding the money that we were due to be paid Tuesday 31st. So, I mean, the understanding is that Tuesday 31st of July, the money just didn't turn up and there was not a single word said. So that's obviously hugely disappointing as well. They say, "As staff, we will continue to fulfil our contractual obligations to the best of our abilities, but we're also considering our next step to ensure payment of the bonuses as promised." Now, what could be the next step for staff if they feel like they've been screwed over?
Well, yeah, as you say, the main thing is legal action. As Nate says, in terms of fulfilling their hours and their contracts, I'm sure as hard-working people, you know, I would imagine they would continue to do that. But again, if they feel that the necessary step is to not do that and they've sought legal advice, then perhaps it could even be that. It could be, you know, I don't know necessarily, but with jobs that have unions and stuff, people strike, don't they? So it's going to be very interesting to see if they've taken that advice and they are supposed to have been paid it and they haven't, and Roland has somehow breached their contracts or anything like that, then perhaps they are well within their rights to make a decision like that. I would think that they might not make that decision just because they, as the letter says, that, you know, they work hard and they go above and beyond for out of goodwill. But it'll be very interesting to see. And really, there's no limit to what they could do. They might even just decide to walk away and find employment elsewhere as well. So it's a very difficult situation, really. It's all come about again for the same reason that lots of other issues have happened. But as we were all basically saying, I think it hits a little harder because it seems to be hitting what we might term ordinary people as opposed to footballers who perhaps live in a little bubble.
Why do you think Roland's acting like this? I mean, we know he's talking a lot about cost cutting. We know, you know, all the ridiculous stories, including the one today about the bag of crisps not being allowed to be eaten at your desk because of the money saved on cleaning costs. I mean, these sort of things, you know, they come across as ridiculous. I mean, there was a Belgian journalist who tweeted a few moments ago saying he tried to get in contact with Roland about these ridiculous cost cutting measures. But his tweet says, Christophe Tureux, I can't pronounce that name, says, man doesn't want to comment on his brackets embarrassing cost-cutting policy. So obviously he's tried to get in contact with him. Roland doesn't seem to want to speak to the press about it. I mean, why is he doing this to Charlton? Because, I mean, it's a drop in the ocean. I mean, he says it's part of making the club more affordable to be run by a new owner. Obviously, the takeover, Lord knows what's going on. There was an update from the fans forum last night, which really didn't add anything at all to what we already knew, which was they still think it's going to be the Australians. They still think it could happen, but they're still waiting for paperwork. Mm. But he says that making the club run cheaper is for the new owners. But surely as soon as the new owners are going to come in, they're not going to think, right, we don't need to drink water or anything like that. We don't need to clean the place. They're going to put those costs straight back up, find better ways to run it more efficiently if they need to. So why is he doing this?
He's just simply doing it for money. I mean, because even these bonuses, he would have accrued costs into each month to cover these, if it was, I don't know, 50 grand, 100 grand, whatever it was, 100 million, whatever it was. So that's irrelevant. So this is just cash. It's cash. So he doesn't want to pay out the cash because obviously he's cutting back on everything to try and make it more affordable. But like you say, when someone buys it, they look at his new set of accounts, and it'll go, oh, you know, look how, you know, great we're running now, how low cost it is. But A, it's inefficient. B, the motivation's at its lowest, so people ain't going to be productive. So it's a false model. Exactly, these new owners, whoever they are, they will come in and, yeah, probably give people water and let you turn on a light and eat crisp at your desk, because let's face it, I know cleaning probably not cheap, but it's not going to be the biggest cost. And it's like we're talking like scraping the barrel of costs, and for me that's all it is. It's literally trying to scrape any penny, and now he's trying to scrape money off the people that actually are probably the most important to him.
And he doesn't, I mean, the problem is he doesn't seem to care about morale of the staff, and obviously that's important. You won't be surprised to see that obviously that the Coalition Against Roland Du Châtelet have decided to throw their support behind the staff, and they released their own statement saying they're gonna get involved with a protest. They've called for fans to sort of gather at the West Stand on Saturday 2:15 for a protest. And obviously, I mean, you'd expect Charlton fans to get behind the members of staff. Don't forget, a lot of these members of staff are Charlton fans as well. But of course, you know, even if they're Millwall fans, who cares? They're still working people who've gone out to try and earn a living. And now, in the name of our club, they're being a little bit screwed over, it would seem.
Yeah, and we've shown in recent weeks, and in fact, well, ever since I've been a Charlton fan, we've shown it. But you think about things like the Jack Jeffries thing the other week. We're a Charlton family. We've always been. We always pull together in difficult situations for anyone, whatever those situations are. And you're right, I would expect the fans to do that again. I think, every time something like this happens, it's, well, what can we do? What can we do to get him out? Because that's been Card's purpose from the start. And I know people are calling on the EFL to take action and stuff and finding that frustrating. But this one, as I say, has hit so much closer to home because of who it's affecting. And I think, in terms of stopping games and throwing things on the pitch, I don't know if it's going to be a protest like that, but it's going to be a massive show of solidarity, a massive coming together. I don't know how many fans are going to come back out to the game necessarily, but I think you can see a big show of support from Charlton fans on Saturday, because they don't like the fact, you feel like a representative as a club, as a fan. You know, this is happening to our club, and we're reading about this in the press, and I've got mates texting me saying, what are your club up to, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's not my club, I just happen to support them. So, for people who work at that club, you almost end up feeling responsible, because you're a fan of that club, and it's just not fair. So, I'd expect a fair few people to come out for that.
Marion tweets in, lack of communication on this is appalling, but it's not surprising, knowing Roland Du Châtelet. Right, let's have a quick break. I think we've covered that very difficult subject. When we come back, we'll talk about another very difficult subject, the fact that...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare.
PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Peterborough beat us on Tuesday.
Great work from Tariq Fosu, and now it's Forster Kaski over here on this near side to take the corner. Swings it in. It's gone deep. Bowers at the far post. Gets ahead of there. Oh, it's in! Patrick Bauer heads the ball down.
Come on!
Beyond Ian Lawler and into the back of the net for Charlton's opener.
Oh, I can't believe that went in, Terry Smith. The ball came in from Forster Kaski at the back post. Bauer's able to beat his man. He just heads it down on the ground almost.
So welcome back to Charlton Live. As you heard at the very top of the show, we conceded a late penalty on Tuesday evening to lose the game to Peterborough United, and not many people were very happy about the decision, Nathan.
No, to be fair, I was where I sit. I couldn't really see. I got obviously just see a guy go flying, so my initial reaction that it was obviously a pen. And didn't think much of it, and then until you see obviously Bo's reaction and obviously see it back, and I still can't believe it was given. But the whole night, you know, the whole night it was just frustrating, because obviously I don't think the ref was doing it on purpose, but it did seem like everything was going to them. But again, at the same time, I don't think we did enough personally going forward. I don't think we deserve to lose the game. But we didn't. I don't think we deserve to win it either. So I mean, and that was the disappointing thing. We didn't test their goalie too much, but neither did them. Apart from that great save from Deals, but it was just a big. It was a big blow, put it that way. But yeah. And it's just a shame that big geezer is. He was there as well, because I don't think he's liked by many people.
Yeah, I mean, talking of Big Tom. I mean, Boya clearly felt that. That Steve Evans, the Peterborough manager, who we've known, you know, from playing Leeds when he was there and from playing Rotherham, that he's always been a big presence on the touchline and a loud presence on the touchline. You know, he always puts pressure on the referee, and, you know, you'll say what you like about it to him. He doesn't care what you think. He's quite happy. He's going to berate the referee all game. That's his style. That's what works for him. Do you think that does affect the referee?
Put pressure on his waistband as well, didn't he? I think it does. Yeah, I genuinely think it does, because... You know, from everyone in the ground could see him. Like, every single decision, he was off down that touchline as quickly as his little legs could take him and hurling abuse at him. And if he wasn't going, it was his assistant as well. And it was just constant. And obviously, that fourth official's there to kind of mediate the managers and make sure they don't break any of the laws of the game and all of that. And all managers are going to get in the fourth official's ear. We've seen Boya do it as well, and all managers do, but... For me, how Evans got away with that, I have no idea, because they brought in these cards for managers, and okay, apparently he got one in the tunnel. We saw Boya get one as well, but if that's only a booking, I mean, that's the equivalent of going in studs up, two-footed on someone's knee and getting a booking. For me, the way he acted was just appalling. And like Nath says, and like Boya says, to his credit, it's not an easy job, and I don't think anyone claims that it is. But when you've got someone like that putting pressure on you all game, it must start to niggle away at the back of your mind, and I don't think that referee's consciously there thinking, oh, brilliant, if one of those Peterborough players goes down, I'll get to give a penalty now. I don't think he's thinking like that, but he's always got in the back of his mind that Evans is there barking at him all game. And when that 50-50 decision happens, I think instinctively he's maybe leans a little bit that way, which is so unfair. And that's why I think Boya and a lot of the fans left so angry after the game, because we felt like we'd been robbed.
Yeah, I mean, certainly looking back at the penalty decision, it seems very, very harsh on Lewis Page. I was the same as Nathan in the ground. Like, once you see it, I tend to, if I can't see it clearly, I tend to err on the side of the referee purely because he would have had a better view than me. But then the more you watch it and then you see how far back he was, it definitely makes it very debatable. I mean, we had a handball shout down the other end, which I didn't think would have been one either.
No.
But I mean, overall, from the performance, there's certainly plenty of positives to say. We're still in this, you know, weakened squad situation, but there's some good things we saw. Perhaps not testing the keeper enough.
Yeah, I think first off, I thought we got overrun a little bit in the middle. But again, you know, Albie was making his first start. Obviously, we looked quite a bit leggy. But we all know the shortage we have at central midfielders at the moment. I thought, obviously, Bowyer didn't start George and probably didn't bring him on because he wanted someone with a bit of fresh energy in the middle for Saturday's game. But yeah, it was the first half was a bit meh. But and then the second half, we started to grow into the game a little bit more, and we pushed higher up in the pitch, and we kept the ball more or less in their half. And we, apart from their number 10, who was very tricky, and apart from he should join a circus though, but
Dembele, yeah, he was silky, wasn't he?
But yeah, no, apart from he had that one-on-one. I didn't really feel too threatened by him, but yeah, there were positives. But considering the circumstances with the squad. There was definitely a lot of positives, and like we always say, if players give 110%, which they always do, and they have this season, then you can't really grumble too much, especially with the kids in there, because they're going to be inconsistent. They're not going to play blind in every single game.
Yeah. What about the atmosphere? I thought you considered it was clearly a low crowd. I mean, it's announced as 9,000 and something, including just under 1,000 posh fans. But I mean, the noise inside the valley, considering realistically it was probably only 6,000 Charlton fans there maximum, I thought was absolutely superb.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant as well, and I slightly disagree with Nath. I agree that we didn't test the keeper enough, but I thought we possibly did. It was one of those games where we could have sneaked something from it. I don't think we deserved to take 3 points, but I think we did have opportunities too. We had bits cleared off the line and a few blocks on the edge of the area, and with the crowd getting up like that, it had the feel of one of those games where it was backs against the wall, we feel like the ref's against us, and we're just going to nick it towards the end. And I do think we would have been quite fortunate to do that, but we definitely deserved at minimum a point. And I think the crowd played a big part in that. And in some ways, it perhaps helps when you're up against a manager like Steve Evans, who I'd be surprised if anyone outside of even Peterborough fans, to be honest, like him. And when you've got a referee, as I say, seeming to give every 50-50 the other way, because it builds up that hostility and it becomes more of a battle. And that's what seemed to happen. And it rubbed the crowd up the wrong way. And you start getting more vocal and more vocal because you feel like you're up against everything. It's like the world against you. And I felt like we were going to almost like suck the ball into the net at some point, and then it just obviously just didn't happen in the end.
Now, Lee Bowyer came in to speak to Charlton Live exclusively after the game. He spoke to Terry. You might have seen his Valley Pass press conference where he was on pretty good form, and I've got a small clip of that for you later as well. But this is how he was when he came in to speak to Terry. He was still pretty raging by the time he got to the end of it, but overall, his assessment of the game, I think he was pretty proud of his players.
I think we started the game well. First 10 minutes we moved the ball well, and then we got sloppy, really sloppy. They looked nervy in the first half, the last like 20 minutes or so, well, the middle 20 minutes of the first half, and then last 5-10 minutes, and they started to get a bit more confidence again. So I just said to them at half time, like, look, you're not nervous, like you're a good team, you're good players, just relax, just move the ball, pass the ball, we do it every day in training, so just believe in yourselves, you know. And they done that second half. I think they moved the ball well. We got out from the back. We got round the back of them. Then we came out. We switched it. We got in around the back of them time and time again. And just that final cross, you know, we just couldn't pick someone out. Or the keeper made a great save from Lowell. It just didn't fall for us when it's an aerial thing. Like, everything just seemed to drop to them, you know. It was a frustrating night, but I can't have asked for no more from them. They've given me everything there, and they've been robbed, cheated, however way you want to dress it up. They don't deserve to come away with nothing there. We was the better side. Anyone that knows the game of football will tell you that we was the better side tonight, and we was the team on top. We was the one that was passing. We was the one that was moving. We was competing, winning second balls. They've done everything that I asked from them, and then they come away with nothing. They don't deserve that. Not from a stupid decision, not from something from a referee that obviously hasn't got a clue about the game, because that is not a penalty. And it's wrong, because you've got someone that's making the decision and he's taking something away from 11, 12, 13 players, or however many that we had out there at the time. It's wrong, because they're... Now they're going home and they're disheartened and they're hurting, and And that's just from one decision. And nothing's going to happen to him. I'm going to get in trouble. I know I am. And I don't care. Because at the end of the day, I will speak up about stuff that I believe in. If it was a penalty, I'd say, yeah, it was a penalty. But it wasn't. And then now he's going to go home and then he'll probably get a little telling off and then he'll still carry on and I'll probably have a little ban somewhere about can't watch the game or whatever. But he's going to be able to go and referee next week. It's wrong. In every flipping sense of the, it's just wrong. I don't know why he gave that decision. I don't know. But there's contact. Of course there's contact. It's a contact sport. But it's not a penalty.
For Omnicoms, we called it side-by-side contact and two players just trying to get to the ball. I also called it that... I wouldn't say I was predicting something like that, but I call it the Evans factor in as much as that... prior to that, some of the split decisions were going Peterborough's way, and
they all did.
You do wonder whether or not the officials then just get conscious of that,
scared.
Yeah, exactly.
Scared. He's bullied him into the decision, so now he's more worried about that their manager and what he's saying than giving the right decision. And right at the end of the game, like everything, every 50-50 decision went their way. We had Lowell Taylor getting bundled over, no foul. Their striker gets a little touch, rolls around, foul. Like, are you kidding me? Both teams are making fouls, not just one. It works both ways, and that's why I got in trouble in the first half, because I'm saying, look, just make it fair. Just make it fair. Like, you can't just go one-sided here. Like, their team are failing as well. But it shouldn't be decided on that. They deserve more than that, the lads, you know. They've given everything. The fans were great again tonight. They've applauded them off. Just lost the game and they've applauded them off. Like, that's how much they can tell what they're giving out there. And I just said to the lads, you keep doing that and it will turn. We've got players coming back from injury soon. It will turn. It strengthen the squad. You keep working like the way you have from the day I've took over, and then you will keep winning games. You will win games, and you won't stop once they start, for sure.
So you can tell there that Lee Bowyer was still pretty upset by the time he came in to speak to Terry. But I mean, you don't often see a manager like that. If we're being honest, you know, that virulent after a game, like, you know, I don't know if anyone actually sat down and watched the Quest highlights, the Football League highlights on Quest on Wednesday night last night. He's interviewing that one was good as well. Like, I was sort of sitting there watching him so irate, and it was really getting my juices flowing, Nathan.
Yeah, no, he was flipping angry, wasn't he? I thought we nearly went then. But no, you can understand it, because it was, if it finished 0-0 and there was no penalty, it would still been annoying, because like he said, like, there were a couple of times where I thought Lyle was probably backing in a bit too much. But there were times where he was fouled, or it was the 50-50 balls, like Bose was saying. And that's what frustrates me, because it's like, okay, if you're going to give... And we had it the same at Accrington as well, with the fouls and the... You know, they were inconsistent. And it just seems every week, the referees at this level are just... It's always... If it's not us, it's another team. And it's just frustrating. And you could tell how much it means to him and how much he cares, because... And that's why I think a lot of people can relate to Bose, is because he says what all of us are thinking. And would it react exactly the same way if we was in his position?
One of the other things that all of us were thinking was that Steve Evans is a larger-than-life gentleman. And this is exactly how Lee Bowyer described him during his press conference.
I don't know whether their manager, because he's just like this big geezer that's standing on the side, he's bullying like the fourth official, constantly hammering the fourth official, then maybe he's afraid. I don't know. But I feel like maybe he's been bullied into that, because every slight decision went to them. Every single one.
Lovely, big geezer standing on the side. I was absolutely floored when I heard that line. But again, I mean, like I say, it's very South London and I enjoyed it very much. Right, during today's press day, Lee Bowyer was also talking about potential incomings here at the Valley. Don't forget, of course, the loan window is still open up until the end of the month between EFL clubs. So this is what Lee had to say on incomings.
You touched earlier on possible transfer targets that you're keen to get players in. Is there any update on that at all?
Yeah, we're just waiting for a club to come back to us. We're in negotiation with a club at the moment for a player. I met the player yesterday and persuaded him to come to us. So that's good. Now it's out of my hands and it's between the two clubs. So I was hoping to get him in for this morning so he can train today and tomorrow. But it's not looking likely now. So yeah, hopefully it'll all go well today and he'll be in tomorrow.
Confident you'll get it over the line?
Yeah, like I said, I can't do no more what I've done. I've persuaded him to come. It's the financial side now, and unfortunately I can't control that. But I know that our owner has put up as much as we possibly can. So it's just hoping that the other club can accept it, because obviously the players on more money than what we can offer. So, and I know the lad really wants to come here and play. And so hopefully the two clubs can come to an agreement.
A lot of speculation about Ademola Lookman said going to possibly Leipzig for a lot of money. Does Charlton have a sell-on clause on that, do you know?
I haven't got a clue. I don't know. Nothing to do with me long before I came here, so I don't know. But if he does go there, then it's a good move for him. And if we do have that sell-on clause, then that's good for the club. I like to think that they would have a sell-on clause, but again, it's nothing to do with me. I'm financially nothing to do with it.
Lebo, thank you very much.
So there we go, Lebo. You're saying that our owner has put up as much as we can. I was going to make a joke about that being a couple of bags of crisps, but as we now know, that is now not the correct thing, not the correct currency that we deal in around here. But obviously, jokes aside, you know, we've been linked with a couple of names. Josh Cullen from West Ham, Union O'Kane from Leeds United. I think the Josh Cullen one seems a little bit more likely, doesn't it? So, I mean, do you know much about him? I believe he's a midfielder.
Yeah, good player. Yeah, saw him... Was it Bradford he was at before?
Yeah.
Liked him there. Thought he could offer us a lot. yeah, that story seems to be getting a lot of traction in press as well. So it sounds like that's the player Bo's talking about. And he's another one to kind of shore up that midfield and give us something different in there, which we need, because we've had Lapsley in there start of the season. And we obviously had Albie come in on Tuesday night to, like Nath said earlier, to potentially rest George, but it's not fair on either of those two players to be doing that week in, week out. You want to be able to bring them off the bench and give them little bits of experience. So I think if we could get Cullen over the line, I think that'd be a really good bit of business.
Excellent stuff. Right, earlier on before the show started, I did ask for your three-word reviews of the penalty decision given against Charlton on Tuesday evening. So I'm going to go through a quick few of them, the ones, of course, that are clean enough to be read out. Jimmy Seed's three-word review was not a penalty. Not bad. Robert Waghorn says drive-through robbery. Franco said the referee got conned. Paul Ferguson, the ref needed glasses. Lewis Hurst, result of incompetence and also an utter shambles. Connor says it was an awful decision. Can't read Clint's one. Woody says that Evans bribes refs, although that's an allegation and it's never been proved.
Or eats.
Yeah. He was, of course, caught up in some different financial thing a few years ago, actually, wasn't he? But when he was the Boston United manager. But we won't talk about that. Non-user account says it was never a penalty. Stuart Bennett says fat ginger so-and-so. Thank you for your tweets in on that. There's a couple more that are a bit sweary as well. Well, let's have a quick break. Still here on Charlton Live, we're going to hear from the women's team ahead of their first home game of the season. And we're also going to start looking ahead to the Fleetwood game.
Occupying that left-hand side at the moment. Little step over onto his left foot. Marshall, ball in the box is good. And Rebo, first time.
Oh, what a goal!
Lovely finish!
Oh, what a goal!
Joe Rebo gives Charlton the lead. Great ball in from Mark Marshall on the left-hand side. Chips it in. And Rebo, with a calm left-footed volley, have found the bottom right corner and Charlton have the lead.
So welcome back to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Now, the women's team kicked off their season starting on last Sunday in the Continental Cup. They got beaten quite heavily, actually, unfortunately, down at Lewis. But they're playing their first home game of the campaign this Sunday over their new home ground, VCD. So we got in contact with Grace Coombs, the vice-captain of the women's team earlier, just to find out how their preparations for the new season has been going.
Yeah, we're all really excited. It's a brand new challenge for us. There's some really tough teams in the league, some new teams that we haven't played before as well. So I think we're all really looking forward to it, looking forward to testing ourselves against very good teams, and teams that have got a lot of internationals and that. So yeah, everyone's really excited for the season to come.
So obviously after winning the league and then going on to win the playoff to get promotion last season, I mean, are you expecting it's going to be quite a big sort of step up in quality this year when you're in the Championship?
Yeah, I think from the league last year, there were a lot of games that probably didn't challenge us as much as we would have liked. So I think this year every single game is going to be hard. We can't underestimate any team and we're going to have to prepare differently for every game. And I think we're just going to have to work really hard to be as successful as we were last year.
So how do you think the squad's shaping up? Because obviously you've signed Gemma Bryan back from Palace, but is it more importantly, I guess, the players that you've retained as well this summer?
Yeah, so we managed to keep a good core of the team from last year and made a lot of new additions as well. I think we haven't really had much time with everyone at the minute because we've had quite a few injuries, unfortunately. But people are just starting to get fit again, and I think the longer we're kind of together, the better it will get, and we'll kind of create an environment that we had last year, and hopefully the success that we had will be replicated this season.
Obviously, you've got the Continental Cup game with Millwall coming up. The league season doesn't start for another couple of weeks. But you've already had a cup game as well, which away at Lewis last week, which I guess was a bit of a difficult result. So I guess you'll be hoping to try and get sort of back on track on Sunday with Millwall.
Yeah, we were really disappointed about how the weekend went. The performance, especially in the first half, was quite a good performance. And I think a few things didn't go our way. But I mean, that's football, and we've just got to learn from it and push on to this weekend. Games against Millwall are always tough, and they're always quite intense, and there's quite a lot of history between us and them, even just in the women's game. So I'm sure everyone will be really up for it. Everyone's looking to put right last Sunday, and looking forward to the challenge of it as well, and try and get our first win in the cup to push on for the first league game, which is in a few weeks' time.
And obviously, you've got your new home ground now. You've moved over to VCD Athletic in Crayford. So it'd be nice to see as many Charlton fans as possible come down to support you.
Yeah, of course it would be. So we played there a couple of times so far in pre-season. So hopefully we're getting comfortable to it. And like I said, it'd be great if people come down and watch us, kind of not too far from Charlton or kind of based Kentway, which if anyone can get down to support us, then we'd all really appreciate that.
And finally, I mean, what are the aims for the season with the step up in division? Is it a case of just trying to consolidate, or are you hoping to try and get towards the upper reaches of the table, or is it just a case of maybe you're just trying to find out how you are at that level at the moment?
I think potentially just a mixture of both. We obviously don't really want to let ourselves down, and we have got quite high expectations for ourselves if we can kind of all gel together and keep working forward. But I think it's just mainly just try and get the team the same character it had last year, try and build on that, integrate the new players, and then there's not a lot of pressure on us, whereas in previous seasons there's always been a lot of pressure on us to do well, whereas this season we don't have that, which is going to be new for us. But I think slightly consolidate, but we want to finish as high as we can, and the whole season is going to be a learning curve for us. So it's just a case of kind of taking one game at a time and seeing how we get on.
Grace Coombs there from the Charlton Athletic women's team, the vice-captain. They're playing against Millwall at their new home ground, VCD Athletic, on Sunday at 2 o'clock. So it'd be great if as many of you as possible can get down there. Right, just before we start, looking ahead to Fleetwood, excuse me, a couple of tweets. London in at Geezer says, it's disgusting the way that Roland has treated the staff at Charlton, though no surprise, but I'm not sure what shouting at a window will achieve. Now, I guess there's many fans out there who just... they feel helpless, and there's not really much anyone can do other than just try and be a big visual protest to try and get some media attention and try and embarrass the owner. And I guess the gathering that's being sorted out for Saturday is probably the best they can do at the moment in time.
Yeah, you're right. And you sort of, you're sitting there and you're thinking like, well, what can I do? What can I do? And I think, yeah, that appears to be the only solution for now. We've had protests on the pitch and all sorts as well. So we've tried all sorts, and credit to Card for doing that. But as I say, this is a show of solidarity, really, and it's coming together and showing those employees who are struggling with this issue at the moment that they're not on their own. And if that's this seems to be the most appropriate way that we can show that that number of people are behind them. Is it going to make any difference to Roland directly? Maybe not. But we've said that about all the protests. But it's about making a statement and, you know, saying, well, is it going to make a difference? Well, all you can do is try, and you want to feel like you're at least done what you can, and that's what people will do.
Yeah, Pete tweeted in, if I can shed a glimmer of hope, it does start with saying that the EFL needs to process a few documents so there is light at the end of the tunnel. Talking about, of course, sort of Roland's message, although all the fans forum stuff as well. But, you know, how, you know, we've been at that situation for quite a while now, unfortunately. Excuse me. It says, as immoral as it is saving money, surely lower league clubs operate in similar, if not worse, circumstances. Plus, if people are worried about the bonuses, how about Charlton Card and the fans crowd fund? I mean, that's exactly what Rowan wants. He doesn't want to pay the bonus. He'd be delighted if someone else pays it. You know, like I say, if there is a contract which or something, some sort of agreement that the has been offered to the people. I mean, with all due respect to Oldham, for example, for, you know, just picking a random lower league club. I mean, if their owner goes around promising staff bonuses and then can't pay it, well, you've promised it, and legally, if you have, then you'd probably be caught out on that. And, you know, Roland's worth a lot of money. You know, we're not a normal lower league club. You know, if he's going around promising stuff, you know, if he has, that's what the staff are saying he has, then he should pay it. And that's where it is. But yeah, I certainly don't think the fans should be paying it for him, because that's, I mean, it's Roland's the one who's supposedly, you know, it's his company that supposedly have made the promise, if that is the case. So, you know, I don't think fans should be paying that. Right, time to look ahead to Saturday's game with Fleetwood. I spoke to Rosie Swarbrick earlier on this evening. She's writes for the Blackpool Gazette, covering Fleetwood Town, and she told us exactly what we can expect from Joey Barton's side, who of course had that massive win at Scunthorpe last night. So this is what Rosie Swarbrick has to say about Fleetwood Town.
It's kind of one of those, not, I wouldn't say it's work in progress, but it's certainly a developing, Joey Barton keeps using the phrase embryonic. It's embryonic stages, the what he's trying to install, the team that he's trying and squad that he's trying to build at Fleetwood Town at the moment. I think everyone who watched the opening day defeat was a bit really surprised, given the pre-season. He'd had an unbeaten pre-season. He'd started off 4-3-3, and we really expected some attacking, fast-flowing, you know, really inventive football, especially given that forward pack that Fleetwood have, and it just didn't happen on that Saturday. But since then, we've seen kind of what we expected from a Fleetwood point of view, what the fans expected to see, which is, you know, a lot more organisation, a lot more concentration, a lot more bite, a lot more grit, a lot more positivity, and obviously the Fleur players. And I think everything sort of clicked into place last night, on Wednesday night, at Scunthorpe in that 5-0 win. And I think the beauty, and I think what the rest of the division should fear, is the fact that was only a glimpse of what this side is capable of. That was 20 minutes of absolute full throttle attacking football from both Wes Burns and Ched Evans, who were both unplayable for Scunthorpe. And if they play like that for a full 90 minutes, we could be talking about a 10-0. But also, Scunthorpe had chances last night. You know, it was a very good game by keeper Alex Kearns. I also gave him a 9 in my player ratings, because he made 3 huge, massive saves at times that could have changed perhaps the outlook of the game, the whole feel of the game. So there's definitely still work to be done from a Fleetwood point of view, but they just won 5-0 away from home. So if you can understand what I'm trying to say there, which is a case of, you know, it's great, it's a fantastic result, but there's still work to do, and I think that should strike fear into the rest of the division.
Yeah, certainly. I wasn't too comfortable when I saw all those goals flying in for Fleetwood last night. I mean, obviously, Joey Barton was perhaps a bit of a surprise choice for manager when he was announced sort of midway through last season, took over at this, in pre-season. How's he been? I mean, I've read some of your stories about some of his choice language during press conferences. What's he been like to work with, and has he sort of already started to stamp his mark on his side?
Yeah, he's been great for me personally. I think, as you can tell from my voice, I'm quite working class in my own background, and Joey's obviously a working class lad. So I think we both are quite relaxed around each other in the way that we speak. Obviously, my stuff's a lot written. So when it comes to the radio, when it comes to the TV guys, he has to be on guard. I think, you know, watch his language, so to speak. But he knows when it comes to, he's experienced enough as a player, he knows when it comes to the written press that we can always change the word. So I've had some good fun with changing the words, because obviously I did a tweet the other day that went, got a lot of attention about Joey Barton's description of how to manage his players and managing attitudes and using the word poo, but obviously everyone knows Joey Barton, the character, he does not say that word, so I've used artistic license to change a swear word there. But yeah, it's been brilliant, and also I feel like I, as a football writer, am learning a lot from him. I mean, the headlines that, you know, we've gone as the people, stuff that people might read, or, you know, the poo stories or the elaborate stuff about, you know, him being tired and all that sort of stuff. But really, as a football man, he's talking about learning and the evolution of the game. I mean, the other day he gave some big quote about Darwinism and how, you know, football is the ultimate place for the Darwinistic theories, and goes into all this philosophy side of the game and talking about mentality. But for me, the big thing, anyone who saw Fleetwood Town last season will have known that it was a very inexperienced side. You know, there was a big problem at left back when Amari Bell left. They were vulnerable on set pieces. And over the pre-season, he's worked on all of the things that were at fault for last season. He studied last season, saw what happened, looked at the bunch of players he's got at his disposal, thought, right, how can I work with them? How can I get the best of it out of each player? And he really assessed the squad. And it also, for me, I found it, because I thought, coming in, oh, this is the next player, he's not going to know anything about League One, having not played there. And the way that he talked about players, he knew all about Kyle Dempsey. He knew all about, you know, every single one of the Fleetwood Town player that you as a writer or you as a journalist that you've been studying, and he comes in and he tells you and he knows their strengths and weaknesses, and it's just great to see that actually he knows what he's doing, he studied what he's doing. And I don't think people take for granted, they just say, oh, Joey Barton, the name, the some of the comments, some of the, you know, but actually he's a really, really intelligent man and a really, really intelligent football man who's done his research and assessed his squad. And the way that he's built, just look at his signings, Dean Marnie from Burnley, Jason Holt on loan from Rangers. I mean, they didn't even play that big a part in the 5-0 win on Wednesday, starting, but didn't impress me on Wednesday night. But that's the whole point of it. He's gone out, got experience in the back line. Craig Morgan had a great game for us on Wednesday night. And compliment, and just look at that attack. I mean, Ched Evans, 4 goals in four league games, and you know, there's so much more potential to come from this side, and I think that's the really exciting thing that everyone around Fleetwood is watching now. And also the reaction to last Saturday, you know, they conceded a last gasp goal to Rochdale. They should have wrapped that game up. They were 2-1 ahead. They should have wrapped that game up. It should have been 3-4-1, and then Rochdale scoring the last minute. But that's all about learning, game management. They learned how to manage a game against Scunthorpe last night, and that's all I think. It's all about a learning process about this division, and I'm just really, really, I think everyone's really excited about what is going on through the town.
So has he sort of like had any stated aims for this season? You know, because obviously Fleetwood themselves have been in League One. I think it's their fifth year now, 14th place last year, but they, you know, got to the playoffs a couple of years ago. So, I mean, have they got a stated aim, and what are the fans' sort of expectations this year?
I think everyone's expecting Fleetwood to be in the top half. Joey's aims, he's just come out, he's been a bit, not, I wouldn't say wishy-washy, but he's been a bit vague on his aims. He's come out and said that, you know, really, he just wants them to be better than they were last season and better than they are every day. He just wants them to keep improving and keep improving. But we all know that what that perhaps is called for is that he wants them to be up there, but I don't think he wants to come out and set his stall out and say, look, you know, we are going for promotion.
So thank you to Rosie there, Swarbrick, from the Blackpool Gazette. Just very quickly on Fleetwood, obviously Joey Barton, I guess in terms of a manager, very similar to ours, really. A bit of new blood, really. Obviously had a good career, known for being a bit of a feisty player, as was Lee Bowyer as well. So you can see some similarities there between the two managers.
Yeah, I think they're both very honest. They say what they really think, and I think it's quite refreshing. You've got obviously he had a checkered past, shall we say, but
it's one way of putting it.
Yeah, I think a lot of us probably do have a lot of things that if we were in the limelight wouldn't be great in the press.
I've got a story about you tomorrow, Dave, actually, in the paper. Yeah, I should have mentioned that.
But yeah, no, I think it's great, and Yeah, it'd be interesting if it's something similar to Tuesday, if they have a disagreement between Bowes and Joey. But I've heard Joey. I see him on Question Time. I think he's quite an intelligent guy, considering when you compare him into other footballers. But yeah, no, I don't have anything against him. I hope he does well, but obviously not when he plays us.
Yeah, exactly. Right, let's hear the preview from the Charlton point of view. Of course, Natalie Bowyer sat down again for his press day today. This is what he had to say looking ahead to Saturday's game.
Joey Barton of Fleetwood Town, next up at the Valley on Saturday. Fresh from a convincing 5-0 win at Scunthorpe. Not many teams go to Scunthorpe and score 5 goals.
No, I don't think we will be doing that. I hope we do, but I don't think we will. But I don't know what it is at the moment. Whoever we play, they go and score 3, 4, 5 goals. I don't know what's going on. But yeah, Joey knows the game. He's a good player. He'll have good experience that he can pass on to his players. And yeah, it's going to be a tough game. There's a lot of teams in this league that can go and do something on a one-off thing. But it's going to be tough. I know that. But there's no team in here, in this division, and I've said it from the beginning, that I'm worried about. Wigan last year, they was an exception, and Blackburn, and we beat Blackburn last year, you know. But this season, there's not really anyone that stands out, and I think, okay, well, I'm worried about them, because I know that my squad of players can match anyone on the day. So I think Saturday will be a tough game, but we'll be ready, and the best team will win on the day.
Is Joey someone you know?
Not really. We played in a testimonial for Stephen Harper at Newcastle. I think we played against each other maybe a couple of times, but I don't really know him. I have to say hello to him, but I mean, the testimonial seemed a nice lad. So.
Yeah, sorry about the low-flying jet at the end of that. I was listening to that earlier. So it's either a lawnmower or a plane or something that seems to go past.
Roland coming over.
Yeah, nah.
No cutback on his jet.
Yeah, at the end of that. But that's Lee Bowyer looking ahead. Obviously, not best mates with Joey Barton. Doesn't know him that well, but they will have crossed paths before. Looking at it from a Charlton point of view, I mean, it sounds like Eagle's going to be back on the bench. Bob Liskin's just stated that he's worried. That is far too early. He's only had half a pre-season. I know Football League since his return, so he says it's too risky. But I mean, it's always good to have bodies back in the squad, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think even just having him back on the bench will make a difference just in terms of the atmosphere around the squad as well. I think we have got to be careful. And Lee said it himself. We've got Reeves back in training and Tariq back in training as well. But we need to take it very gently. Same with Pierce as well. And then longer term Clark as well when he comes back. These players have been out for a long time, Pierce obviously less so. So there's absolutely no point rushing them in, because then they're just going to break down again and going to be out for even longer. So we've got to be careful with them. Like Nath said earlier, I expect Lapsley will probably come into the starting lineup in place of Albie. But I can't really see any changes to that 11 aside from that, really.
Obviously, we know that Fleetwood have gone and won 5-0 last night up at Scunthorpe, being 4-0 up at half time. I mean, do you think that surely they're going to be on a bit of a high coming into this game? They've won both their away games so far this season, because they won 2-0 at Oxford United as well.
Yeah, I think they are going to be. But, Peterborough had won 3 out of 3 when they came to us, and yeah, aside from that penalty.
And then it was 4 out of 4.
yeah. But, on the balance of that game, I think they were lucky to get out of here with all 3 points. So, Sunderland have come down with a massive reputation. We took them to the line. So, I don't think necessarily we need to be too afraid. I mean, obviously they're going to be buoyed by that win in midweek, but they could just as easily come here and we could get something as well. So my worry is that we did look leggy, like Nath said, towards the end of both halves on Tuesday night. And because we haven't got a lot of options in terms of turning the squad around, we might tire again. So, yeah, I mean, it's not going to be an easy game. I'm not suggesting that, but I just think we've got to go into it with no fear and feel like we can get something from the game.
Likelihood go with a 3-5-2 again that served us reasonably well so far this season?
Yeah, I think so. Probably will be going 3-5-2, but like Tom, just concerned about the legs, really, because I think if we don't go in with a lead to hold on to, the longer it goes on, the less we've got to change a game, and that's what sort of worries me.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that worries me, really. But, yeah, Fleetwood, Berry, whoever else, they're not in the league, but anyone, I think, would beat anyone on our day.
Yeah. hopefully our day is Saturday. So let's sort of start thinking about our Jacko's jackpot as well. Have we put it out to anyone this week, Nath?
No, I've been busy today, but you can have a go if you want.
Have we? All right, we'll put it out to someone. The first person to tweet in before the end of the show gets to choose the Jacko's jackpot. Probably won't be able to announce it until after the show, but first person to tweet in can decide, just pick a scorer and a scorer, and we'll put £2.50 on that for the upbeats, hoping that money will come in. Let's have some actual predictions then. Tom, I'll start with you.
I'll take a point, so I'll say 1-1.
1-1, yeah.
I'm going 1-0 Charlton.
1-0 Charlton.
Igor.
Well, yeah, come off the bench late. Hopefully, I'm sure it'll be an exciting game. Right, thanks to those of you who have listened live to the show this evening. Don't forget, we'll be back here on Maritime Radio on Sunday evening. My birthday as well, so make sure you all email in some nice presents.
Email some presents.
Where we look back at the Fleetwood game. So make sure you join us, Maritime Radio, 7 o'clock. Thank you for all your tweets. In today, your free word reviews, most of which we could read out on air, and your other comments as well. Don't forget, as Card have announced, there is going to be a protest at the Valley 2:15 on Saturday outside the West Stand if you want to be involved with that. Right, hopefully it'll be 3 points. Tom and Nathan, thank you for joining us.
Cheers, boys.
I've been Louis Mendes. This has been the Big Match Preview. Thank you for listening all the way to the end. We'll be back here on Sunday, but we'll see you later.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code GLOW.